Now entering the truth zone, deep into the vortex of the information revolution with your host, Michael B.
My name is Michael B., and this is The Truth Zone, coming to you live from the North Dallas Metroplex on this beautiful Friday morning. And I apologize for being a little bit late, but, you know, when it's Friday and it's gorgeous out, you know, you just want to take it all in before it hits 103 or so today. One of the beautiful things about doing a podcast is that you really don't have to be locked in every single day to the exact time. Since I'm 24/7 and you people can pick it up at your leisure, I don't have to sweat about being 25 minutes late. So today I think we're going to look at your tax dollars at work. And I have several clips that we're going to play of those that are in office, from Hank Johnson, Maxine Waters, Nancy Pelosi, John McCain, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and going to talk a little bit about the failed so-called all-out repeal of the Affordable Care Act. Now, I have to make clear again, because all of you in Facebook universe, you continue to follow the mainstream media and the Washington, D.C. language. This is not about the quality of our health care. This is about the federal government controlling the health insurance industry. And apparently, history has not taught enough people that everything the government touches, it goes bad. I told you yesterday how when they brought in prohibition in 1920, alcoholism shot through the roof. Because when you tell someone they can't do something, and you create laws, someone's going to jump in and they're going to create it anyway. And then when you tell people they can't do this or they can't do that, they're going to do it. Instead of advising about the dangers of doing something, the government wants to oppressively control what they think is in our best interest. And of course, then our natural tendency is to rebel. And further, the federal government controlling the alcohol industry by shutting it down, legally anyway, also poisoned United States citizens to get them to not want to drink. And they killed people. Under the Nixon administration, the federal government started the war on drugs, and drug use exploded. And never mind, though, that the byproduct of MKUltra and the CIA creating LSD and then dispersing it to the public for great profits, drug addiction exploded. when the federal government decided to hand out divorces like candy, divorce rates exploded. And now we have the federal government basically owning the health insurance industry. And you have to understand, folks, the giant health insurance industries wanted this. It is no different than the big corporations like IBM, GE, Apple, Microsoft, all of them wanted NAFTA. Because the giant companies can have can handle steep regulations, because they eliminate smaller competition and their profits explode. And we've seen this in the health insurance industry. See, Rand Paul, when he talked about this situation, he never talked about hospitals and doctors, because this isn't about them. It's about the health insurance industry. And it has profited from $7 plus billion to $15 plus billion. So, do you think that it's in the health insurance industry's best interest for the federal government to control that industry? Absolutely. And don't you think a lot of that some of that $15 billion is going to go towards reelecting the same people that are keeping federal control of health insurance in office? Do you think that's remotely possible? And do you think by us continually having the attitude of disposable products, oh, I got to get the latest update. Oh, I got to get the latest new toy. Oh, I got to get this. Oh, I got to get that. Where do you think that these people's profits come from? They come from us. And these politicians, and I'm going to get to these clips, these politicians, half of their time they spend is raising money to get reelected. And we're paying their salaries. Ben Franklin once said, if you want to be rich, don't get into public office. Now, it's the reverse. The easiest way to get rich is not joining Amway, is not becoming an Amazon seller, not becoming a day trader. The easiest pathway to getting rich is to become a politician. These people don't even work. And what's better, what's even more amazing, is that the stuff that they want to push on us, they're exempt. They can do insider trading. They're exempt from the law. They're allowed to give family members sweet real estate contracts. Nepotism runs rampant in Washington and in the states, and that's okay. They've got free health insurance. We're paying for it. Full 100% comprehensive coverage. They pay nothing. People are outraged that John McCain, a veteran, you know, he likes to sit on them. People like to call him, well, he's an American hero. But people got upset that as a veteran, he didn't go to the VA hospital. Nope. He went to the private sector for health care. Of course. Do you think Do you think he's dumb enough to get below average health care? Of course not. So why would he use his VA health insurance? I wouldn't. But you see, we're the idiots. We're the idiots. They feed us dirt, and we like it. We like it. We have 7 Republican senators that voted no on the repeal of the ACA, and those same 7 senators that were in office in 2015 voted yes to repeal because they knew that Obama was going to veto it, and they were ramping us up. They were softening us up for re-election in 2016, and mission accomplished. And now that we have a president that is just dying to sign anything with the word repeal in it, now they back out and they repeal nothing. Now they repeal nothing. And John McCain seems to be the center point for, I guess, being blamed for the repeal. Well, he was only one vote. But I do want to read you this article. The so-called skinny repeal of Obamacare went down in flames early Friday, today, after 3 Republicans, Senator John McCain of Arizona, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, excuse me for this, these freaking Google ads, and Susan Collins of Maine, joined all 48 Democrats in voting against the measure. McCain's vote was arguably the most dramatic, given that he returned to the Senate for votes this week after being diagnosed with brain cancer. In a statement issued after the vote, McCain said he decided to vote against the repeal because it would not lower costs, increase competition, or improve America's health care. Now, the only part I'm going to agree with, I'm going to agree on 2 things. All right, first I'll say in regards to it would not lower costs, I don't know that for sure. It would not increase competition. He is right on that. None of the versions that the GOP have presented the American people, in 2017 talks about what President Trump, then candidate Trump, promised us about increased competition by getting rid of the state lines. None of that is in there. And I don't see any language that talks about our insurance premiums becoming tax deductible at corporations, which he also promised. He made these promises. And he's so willing to go against them, just so he can get on Twitter and say, I repealed Obamacare, thank you very much. Well, it doesn't work that way. Quote from McCain, while the amendment would have repealed some of Obamacare's most burdensome regulations, it offered no replacement, we don't want replacement, to actually reform our health care system. The healthcare system doesn't need to be reformed and deliver affordable quality healthcare to our citizens. Okay, again, this has nothing to do with quality of healthcare. This has to do with access to affordable health insurance so that we the people can leverage against financial catastrophe, in the event of illness or accident. Period. We don't need the healthcare system reformed. It's the best healthcare system. Everybody in the world wants to come to the United States to get treated. Obviously, the quality of our health care must be excellent. This has to do, again, the federal government, once they get their grips around an industry, they don't let go. This is why the founding fathers wanted extremely limited power given to the federal government, which that didn't last long, because the federal government was given supreme power in 1868 with the 14th Amendment. And nobody really realizes that. In 1868, the United States of America turned into the Union of States. The exact same thing as the Soviet Union. Matter of fact, the 14th Amendment in some circles is called the Red Amendment. In essence, we became the Soviet Union before the Soviet Union did. But people don't realize that. That's why we have an amendment called the Fourth Amendment, due process, privacy, things of that nature, all out the window now. And once you give an inch, I mean, look, we all got fooled. Most of us got fooled after 9/11. Most of us thought the Patriot Act was going to be a good thing. I mean, they named it the Patriot Act. Sounded good. Sounded great. That was the first blatant step to invasion of all of us in regards to privacy and property. And it has mushroomed to the point where smart people like me put tape over their cameras on every single laptop. They laughed at Alex Jones from Infowars.com when he was talking about this, what, 15 years ago? That technology was out there and it was coming? That our laptops and our computers could be infiltrated, backdoored, and we could be watched and monitored. Our hard drives could be scoped of everything we do by the government, no less. Never mind a private hacker who we call a criminal, but by the government, mind you. And they're never going to let that go. And that's the problem. And it's going to be the same thing with these, excuse me, with these auto cars, these Tesla mobiles, these Google mobiles. You don't think that the government is going to come up with some sort of a NAFTA or a TPP deal where the government is going to regulate these companies, forming oligarchies, cutting in a smaller competition? And then what's going to happen? Laws are going to be made. Well, if your name is, if your last name goes from A to, let's say, M, you're going to drive on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. N through Z, you're going to get Tuesday, Thursdays, and Saturdays. And Sunday, well, maybe that'll be totally off or some sort of a wild card. You think that's impossible? It's definitely possible. But it sounds cool, doesn't it? Oh, look. I get to play on my iPad while I drive to my girlfriend's house. Excuse me, while the car drives me. Or some executive could say, ooh, I could check out my emails before my big board meeting because my Tesla mobile is going to drive me to work. Yay. Sounds great, doesn't it? It's always cool in the beginning, isn't it? It was cool to have a smartphone in the beginning, wasn't it? Now we have article after article after article about brain tumors exploding. Hi, John McCain. Social ineptitude. Attention deficit disorders exploding. Depression. Boredom. Again, antisocial behavior. And they call this evolution. Well, I am very happy to say I am not evolving into this. The Bible clearly says, be in the world, but don't be of the world. And I am proud to say that I'm going against the stream. I'm proud to say it. I don't want to go with the stream. When I go to a restaurant with my family, the phone is in the car. Look around. Everyone's got their face in their tablets and in their phones. You go ahead, I'll bow out. So, the federal government is never going to let go. That's just reality. And if Donald Trump doesn't take the side of the Freedom Caucus, if he doesn't push to have his agenda that he promised us, and we the people got to stop with this rock star worship of this man. I mean, it's really making me throw up. I love Donald Trump. I love my president. Oh, he's so great. He's a man. He's a man. He's not a god. He's just a man, folks. And I think you're going to be gravely disappointed if you don't take the rose-colored glasses off. You're going to be really disappointed by 2020. Because I'm telling you right now, I see things developing that you're going to be devastated. Me, I'm going to be like, well, you know, I saw the signs. If we don't hold his feet to the fire, if we don't stop the worship, if Donald Trump, and I don't know why he can't do this by executive order, I think he could. And why he isn't? Only he knows. But the ACA could be defunded tomorrow. Tomorrow. Funding to Planned Parenthood could be taken away tomorrow. But it's not being done. The GOP is threatening him about firing Attorney General Sessions. Well, of course. Because Sessions is already in the bag. Don't touch the elites. Don't start pushing indictments on Comey, Lynch, Holder, Clinton, and Obama. Don't do it. He's already been compromised. So you damn right they want to keep him in there because they're going to be kept safe. Does anybody realize if indictments start coming out on the people that I just mentioned, do you understand Washington, D.C. goes into free fall? Because deals are going to be made. deals are going to be made by the lieutenants like Comey and Lynch to save their ass. And senators like Lindsey Graham and John McCain are going to do their damnedest. Their damnedest. To save themselves and their friends from justice. And they threaten Trump in regards to possibly firing Robert Mueller. First of all, Robert Mueller and James Comey are close friends. It's a conflict of interest. Mueller shouldn't even been picked as special counsel. But look, you and I know that the federal government doesn't have to play by any rules. They don't have any. They impose, with the gun to our heads, they impose their will and their rules on us. But we don't have to. We don't have to have them. So, I'm going to play several clips for the remainder of the show. And you're going to see your tax dollars at work. And you, the American people, are re-electing these people over and over again. And I want to lead off with John McCain. Then we're going to go to Nancy Pelosi. We're going to go to Maxine Waters, Hank Johnson, and then Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
That old Beach Boys song, Bomberan. Bomb, bomb, bomb. Anyway.
I'm older than Frankenstein.
We should be able to deliver bottled hot water to dehydrated babies.
And I'm older than dirt.
American Idol is a lot like a presidential primary election. Except for people who live in Michigan and Florida, their votes actually count.
Hello, easy there.
As for me, it's back to work on my new immigration plan. Watch your back, Simon.
And I'm older than dirt.
I'm a proud conservative, liberal, conservative Republican.
It's common knowledge and has been reported in the media that that Al-Qaeda is going back into Iran and receiving training and are coming back into Iraq from Iran. That's well known. I'm sorry. The Iranians are training extremists.
What?
Not Al-Qaeda.
Not Al-Qaeda? Sorry. Not extreme?
And
what?
I'm older than dirt.
I will veto every single beer.
And I'm older than dirt.
Change we can believe in.
And here...
Hello. Easy there.
And here's Nancy.
It's called the Affordable Care Act. It's called the Affordable Care Act. I know you didn't intend any compliment or derogatory, but it's called the Affordable Care Act. Affordable. Good. Affordable. There's a reason. Affordable. 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 Affordable.
Wow. Which one of them could you look in their eyes today and tell them that they're expendable? For another foreign person to have a nicer life, which one would you like to say? You, my child, are expendable for someone else to come over here and not follow the law and have a nicer life.
Well, I commend you for sharing your story. I can't even imagine the pain. No, I can't even imagine. There's nothing, I'm sure, that can compare to the grief that you have
And so I pray for you. I pray for you. And again, we all pray that none of us has to experience what you've experienced. So thank you for channeling your energy to help prevent something like that from happening. But I do want to say to you that in our sanctuary cities, our people are not disobeying the law. These are law-abiding citizens. It enables them to be there without being reported to ICE in case of another crime that they might bear witness to.
Inauguration, there's complete evidence, there's we've seen nothing that we can work, that I can work with President Bush on, and I'm disappointed. But can work with President Bush, can work with President Bush, can work with President Bush on, and I'm disappointed because I thought that there might be some interest because of what he said in the campaign, which turns out to be not true, a hoax, and really dangerous to the economic stability of America's work.
What he said was that the insurance companies must tell the policyholder what they are deprived of, that they're not getting a pre-existing condition.
But there are cancellation notices going out. There's a million of them in California.
Yeah, and it's not. And what they have to do now is to send another letter that says, this is what this is going to mean to you in terms of you won't get pre-existing condition discrimination, and here are the other options that are available to you in the marketplace.
But the president has been.
So, in other words, you can keep what you have, but you can't keep what you have. Now, here are your options to what you can't keep what you have. What a stumbling idiot. But you know what, folks? She's a millionaire. She's a millionaire off of you. Remember that.
Apologetic. He's been accountable for saying something that was not the case. You were Speaker of the House. You, in many ways, were seen as an architect and a key ally on this. And this is what you said back in June of 2009 on MSNBC. Watch.
What we are talking about is affordable, quality, accessible health care for all Americans. It's about choice. If you like what you have and you want to keep it, you have the choice to do that.
Are you accountable for saying something that turned out not to be correct?
Well, it's not that it's not correct. It's that if you want to keep it, and it's important for the insurance company to say to people, this is what your plan does. It doesn't prevent you from being discriminated against on the basis of pre-existing conditions. It doesn't lifetime limits, annual limits, and the
There's
rest
There's a bottom
of that.
Line to this, which I think people understand and the president has acknowledged, which is if there are not, the government is deciding, there have to be minimum standards that are minimum requirements in any health care plan.
Yeah.
So if you have something and you like it and it doesn't meet what the government says you have to have, you cannot keep it.
You had your plan before the enactment of the law in 2010, if you had your plan before, there is nothing in the law that says you have to. But, you know, again, we can go back and forth on this.
Do you notice how she stutters at the... Because she doesn't know she's lying. She knows that she's lying. She's been caught in the lie, and she can't even finish her sentence eligibly because she's a liar. And these political pundits, they just don't push it enough. They just don't push. And they don't come right out and say, you, Nancy Pelosi, are a flaming liar.
This is an important deal because the grandfathering has changed. And the bottom line is the president has acknowledged, it doesn't seem like you're acknowledging, that saying to people back in 2009, hey, this is going to be easy. If you like what you have, you can keep it. This is all about choice.
You could, if you had your plan until the enactment of the law in 2000, the grandfathering is for those before 2000. But let me say this, and I commend the president. He's gracious and he's taking responsibility.
Do you see how she does that? She cuts herself off at the completion of a sentence because she's lying. See, that's her tell. When she's going into lie mode, she cuts the end of every single sentence. I mean, yeah. If I had a health insurance plan before 2010, I obviously have what I have. Well, clearly, Who has the same insurance plan before 2010 with no changes to it and the premium is affordable? Give me a break.
But that doesn't mean that there was anything in the law that said if you like what you had before 2010, you couldn't keep it. I think it's really important to make that point. He took responsibility for the big picture, and that's important for him to do because that's what people see. But there is nothing. But you said earlier, if the law says that you must be canceled, the law doesn't say that. But again, neither here nor there. How do we go forward?
But the bottom line is, people are getting policies that are canceled, and that was not the representation that was made.
And
it was also foreseeable. It was part of the debate that this was actually happening.
Whether the law, I mean, she's a total lunatic. It doesn't matter that the law says that insurance companies have to cancel you. That's ludicrous. The point is, they did. The point is, millions of people lost their health insurance plans that they were happy with, and then they had to go onto the Obamacare exchange and get plans that were inferior and cost more. So, when they were lying to us saying 30 million new people have been insured, no. About 25 million of those people were ones that already had insurance, got canceled because of the new regulations, and had to get Obamacare-style insurance on the exchange. And they were counted as new. It's the same thing with unemployment. It's a total lie. If I lost my $80,000 a year job and then I had to go out and get two jobs totaling $60,000, number one, I'm underemployed. Number two, the government counts it as two newly created jobs, but folks, I'm one person. Do you get the scam? Do you get the scam? We continue with this moron.
Well, now, I would agree with you for the policy since 2010, but not for the 2000 before. But the president has also said that the insurance companies, and many of them have been very responsible and some not so, the insurance company has to say to you, you're not getting the exemption, pre-existing conditions, you will have lifetime limits, you will have annual limits, and by the way, you have to tell people that they can go to the exchange, the marketplace, where they may qualify for a subsidy, or they may just get a better price.
The big picture on this is that it doesn't seem to be working right now. And you argued at the time, you said, look, there's a lot of controversy around this. It's politically hot, and that people don't understand the good things. Right, and that people don't understand the good things that are in it. But then you said this in March of 2010. Watch.
This is
but we have to pass the bill so that you can find out what is in it, away from the fog of the controversy.
And hasn't that idea that you have to pass it before you know what's in it, isn't that really the problem as you look back on it? That there was such a rush to get this done, no Republicans voting for it, and now there are unintended effects of this that were foreseen at the time that you couldn't know the impact of it, and now this is coming home to roost.
No.
Leader Pelosi says that this vote for contempt.
They knew exactly what they were doing. See, these mainstream media pundits, they just lie, and they lie through their teeth, which is why their audiences are plummeting. The Democrats and the rhinos, look, they all know what they're doing. They all know what the game plan is. They've got the playbook. They know, and they knew exactly what Obamacare was going to do and what it was intended to do. It's to drive the American people into poverty and demand single payer. That is what's coming next. You see, we're stupid. The federal government creates the problem, and then we vote on having we beg the federal government to fix the problem that they've created. Really? You just sit on that one for a while.
Is a Republican plan to to suppress the vote. Her theory, I guess, is that you're trying to get the Attorney General of the United States and that he is aggressively going out there fighting a suppression of the vote. Your response to that?
Well, you know, my friend Alan West said the race card was the last card in the deck. I think former Speaker Pelosi has opened up a new deck and has found the two of clubs. I could not believe it when I heard her saying that. Is that all you have to come back with? Is that the best you can come up with? Is that we got together in this grand scheme to suppress votes? And I'm sure she didn't say southern states, but that's what she meant. It's really beneath the office of a member of Congress to say something that outrageous, and the fact that she was once the speaker is mind-numbing. I honestly, and I've heard a lot in my 16 years as a prosecutor, I couldn't believe the words coming out of her mouth. But keep in mind, Greta, this is the same woman who said that she could have arrested Karl Rove any day she wanted. So I don't know what was wrong with her yesterday or today or whenever she said that, but I would schedule an appointment with my doctor if she thinks that we are doing this to suppress votes this fall. That is mind-numbingly stupid.
But we have to pass the bill so that you can find out what is in it.
We get some perspective now from supporters of both candidates, and we start with a minority leader in the U.S. House of Representatives, California Democrat Nancy Pelosi. She was the first and only woman to serve as Speaker of the House, and at this moment, she is the highest-ranking female politician in American history. But, Madam Leader, I think you're probably hoping that that's not going to last much longer after tonight. Is that right?
I'm counting the minutes to relinquish that title. I have won my white and purple colors of the suffragettes in honor of the fact that we have our first woman president, soon to be Hillary Clinton, elected president of the United States. But the vote is sacred until the people speak. We don't celebrate.
So what are you expecting tonight? Are you obviously are hoping for Democrats to do well everywhere, but what are you hearing? What kind of judgment information are you getting that you trust?
Well, tonight I believe that the Democrats will come out in a stronger position. We will, of course, retain the White House with the election of Hillary Clinton. I believe we will gain the United States Senate. It will be close, but we will gain the United States Senate, and we will pick up many seats in the House of Representatives.
Why are you so confident about the White House?
Because I'm confident in the American people. I believe that Hillary Clinton is one of the best prepared people in our history to enter the Oval Office with her vision, her knowledge, her experience, her strategic thinking, her connection.
Well, if it's being a criminal, a liar, and a cheat, then she certainly was the most prepared, because that's really what these politicians are, which is why even right up to July 28th, I don't consider Donald Trump a politician. And until proven otherwise, I still consider Donald Trump a private citizen who has taken public office. And I expect him to act like a private citizen taking public office.
Action to the American people, and I think she has made that case. But as you know, the vote is sacred. It's almost a prayerful time for us as we wait for the people to speak and the returns to come in. But I'm confident. I'm also confident because in our efforts to win seats to the House and to win the Senate, governorships, et cetera, we really have a massive mobilization. We own the ground, and we will pull out that vote.
Said yesterday we did not have the majority, but we have the gavel. Excuse me. We don't have the gavel. We don't have it. We have our own gavel.
Back then, but now we're trying to make a political issue out of it now.
Gentlemen, we'll continue.
Yes, it is true. I did the research on it. You might want to try it. You might want to try it, Madam Leader.
And it didn't stop there. As the congressman walked away, Congresswoman Pelosi stormed across the aisle again, waving her finger. Watch and listen. Even fellow Democrats appear surprised.
I yield 1 minute to the gentleman from Washington, Adam Smith.
The gentleman from Washington is recognized for 1 minute.
What is she doing?
What was she doing? Well, now in a primetime exclusive, Pennsylvania Congressman, Republican Tom Marino joins us live. Good to see you, Congressman.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right, so I got to ask you, you're up there, you're making your remarks. Were you sort of surprised about her approaching and what was happening?
I wasn't surprised, but it's just a breach of protocol. I have never seen it, and my colleagues told me they have never seen it. But look. Anything she does will not surprise me anymore.
She was clearly upset, and I understand this conversation continued. Can you tell us about any further words that were between the two of you what we saw there?
Sure. When she came over the first time, she called me a liar. You're a liar. This isn't true. And you heard what I said about... I was a prosecutor for 18 years, so I did my research, did my homework, and told her about that and said to her that you might want to try that.
Well, I got to ask you this. Her office says that she was just coming to remind you that House Democrats had passed the DREAM Act. Obviously, you were saying that Democrats controlled everything, House, Senate, and White House, and didn't get this done. Her office says that she simply wanted to remind you that House Democrats had acted. And they also say that she accepts your apology.
Yeah.
But was there one?
No. First of all, if she wanted to remind me, she could have asked me to yield, to respond, to make a statement. She could have asked for more time on the floor. She didn't. She just simply was losing it. And when I finished and said, you know, I must have struck a nerve here, then she came back and followed me up and said that I was insignificant.
What was the context of that?
Insignificant. She looked very bizarre, very angry, to the point where she just said, you are insignificant. And, you know, I can take that. As I said, I was a prosecutor for 18 years. I was threatened by drug dealers, murderers, and organized crime. This was a walk in the park. I just suggested to her that we go off the floor, mm-hmm. and so there wasn't a scene. And again, she told me I was insignificant. She's telling really my people in my district they're insignificant. She's telling the American people who aren't royalty, because they're... there is a fair number of people who act like royalty, and that was a primary example of it. And I just simply said, you're acting arrogant, and let's discuss this. And then she was escorted off the floor by the sergeant at arms.
But let's just back up from, with all due respect to the speaker, what he said is not the gospel truth. The fact is that a lot of the spending increases came during the Bush administration, the two unpaid-for wars that we got ourselves engaged in, a prescription drug plan that added enormous amounts to our spending, and the tax cuts for the high end that did not create jobs and create revenue coming in. Yes, we had the Recovery Act, which saved or created 3.5 million jobs. You know, the record of job growth in the private sector has been consistent for many record number of months. So it isn't as much a spending problem as it is a priorities, and that's what a budget is, setting priorities.
But you talk about growth. Even Christina Romer, the former head of the Council of Economic Advisors for the President, says you increase taxes, that also hurts growth.
Well, it's about timing. It's about timing, and it's about timing as to when you make cuts as well.
The fiscal cliff, you raised taxes $650 billion right away.
Yeah, and that was a very good thing to do on people making over the high end in our population. Nothing brings more money to the Treasury of the United States than investment in education of the American people. So it is almost a false argument to say we have a spending problem. We have a budget deficit problem that we have to address.
The top 1%.
Right.
Top 1% pay 37% of all federal income taxes. The top 5% pay 59% of all federal taxes. If you took the total income of everyone making more than $1 million a year, if you taxed it all at 100%, that's only $726 billion, which is less than the projected deficit for this year. I mean, the bottom line, Congresswoman, is you can't raise taxes enough to solve the deficit problem.
Nobody is saying that. We're saying it has to be balanced.
We just couldn't be prouder. I believe that it's a winner. And by the way,
I don't think I have to say anything else, do I? But you people keep re-electing the senile old hag. So let's go to the darker side of Washington. Here's the worst of Maxine Waters.
I'm Dee Wagensay with the Salon 5, and today we're going to give you 5 reasons why Maxine Waters should be our next president. Number 5.
Congressman, we're just, in case you can't see, showing video of you standing on the aisle and shaking a number of presidents' hands over the years, both Republicans and Democrats. So my final question to you, Congressman Engel.
No, you have not. Excuse me.
Talking to me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you had been talking to me about standing on the aisle and shaking hands.
No, I'm sorry, Congresswoman Maxine Waters.
Yes,
I'm talking to Congressman Engel, who has stood there and we've shown over the years.
Okay.
I'm sorry about that for the confusion.
Sure. He is
Why is that correspondent apologizing to Maxine Waters for her being a stupid idiot? That girl made it clear twice who she was addressing, and that moron, Maxine Waters, oblivious to reality, chimes in and gets nasty. And of course, the correspondent was white. I mean, I'm sure that had nothing to do with it. No, I'm sure. And she's apologizing for Maxine Waters' idiocy.
Wrapping his arms around Putin while Putin is continuing to advance into Korea.
Our millennials are a force. I recognize it. And I was the millennial once. No longer, of course. I was the millennial once.
I do not wish to debate.
She was a millennial once. What, in 1900?
I wish to ask, is there one United States senator who will join me in this letter
there
of debate?
There is no debate. There is no debate. The gentlewoman will suspend the...
I have not called for impeachment.
You said I'm going to fight every day until he's impeached. That's what you tweeted.
Yeah, but here's what I've said.
My greatest desire is to lead him right into impeachment.
Impeach 45. Impeach 45. Impeach 45.
That's why I nominate Maxine Waters to be our next president. Because again, Maxine Waters let you know that she is a strong black woman.
I'm a strong black woman.
Yeah, I guess there's a big difference between being a strong black woman and being a strong woman. Obviously, the standards for the strong black woman part are obviously much lower than an actual woman. So let's go to Hank Johnson. This was really the coup de grace. This is an amazing 2 minutes and 37 seconds.
No, this is a island that at its widest level is, 12 miles from shore to shore, and at its smallest level location, it's 7 miles between one shore and the other. Is that correct?
I don't have the exact dimensions, but to your point, sir, I think Guam is a small island.
Very small island, and about 24 miles, if I recall, long. So 24 miles long, about 7 miles wide at the least widest place on the island, and about 20, I don't know how many square miles that is. Do you happen to know?
I don't have that figure with me, sir. I can certainly supply it to you if you'd like.
Yeah, my fear is that the whole island will become so overly populated that it will tip over and capsize.
What?
The island will tip over and capsize. And this maggot is in government, being paid by our tax dollars. Amazing.
We don't anticipate that. The Guam population, I think, currently about 175,000. And again, with 8,000 Marines and their families, it's an addition of about 25,000 more into the population.
And also things like the environment, the sensitive areas of the environment, coral reefs and those kinds of things. And I know that, you know, lots of people don't like to think about that, but, you know, we didn't think about global warming either. And now we do have to think about it. And so I'm concerned from an environmental standpoint whether or not Guam is the best place to do this relocation, but it's actually the only place. Is that correct?
This is what they're having hearings on. This is what they're spending our money on. Islands tipping over. Now here comes Debbie Wasserman Schultz. The first part of this is a ridiculous questioning about diversity within the police department. This is what they're spending time on. Does this police chief have a diversity coach? Seriously. And then, well, it just gets even more and more bizarre. And I understand that Ms. Schultz is practically running for her life now with those Pakistanis being arrested. Looks like they've leaked information because they've had passwords. And maybe there's a WikiLeaks connection. Wouldn't that be funny? Wouldn't that be funny if two Muslims from Pakistan, one of the biggest terrorist countries in the world, harbored Osama bin Laden, I mean, you name it. Wouldn't that be funny if those two kind of turned out to be heroes, if there's a WikiLeaks connection, if they gave WikiLeaks some of the, if not all, of these emails? I think that would be very interesting. So let's go with Wasserman Schultz threatening a police chief.
What about diversity? Mm-hmm. There really has been a challenge that the Capitol Police has faced systemically with diversity. Diversity in your leadership, diversity in recruitment. How are you focusing in on improving that? And, I mean, I don't mean any disrespect, but it's hard to take your word for it. As you said, you're in the leadership now. Sure. You're not in the rank and file. So, Mr. Chairman, it might be helpful for us to have an open, you know, an informal meeting with the Capitol Police union leadership so that we can hear from them. We don't have to do it in a hearing, but it would be, I think, good for members to hear from the union leadership. We have done that from time to time and give them an opportunity without the Capitol Police leadership here to talk to us about, you know, some of their challenges.
But certainly, but diversity has been a problem. We have a great diversity officer, Natalie Holder, who comes to us from the private sector, and she's done a lot of work with municipalities, particularly in New York City. We have what I think we do is we include people. I think we.
But do you have goals? Do you have goals to increase diversity?
Absolutely. We want to broaden everyone's perspective, and we want to be able to
numerical goals. Do you have a goal to say, take the leadership of the Capitol Police diversity from where it is now to a higher number?
We're always trying to build a bench with a very diverse workforce.
So no.
So yes.
So you don't have,
specific numbers. Down. But I have, what I have is, a policy of inclusion and being able to expand the bench.
Okay, but without a plan, I mean, does your diversity officer have a plan that she is following?
Sure.
To
we just started
increase
mentoring with outside agencies and internally. We also are providing opportunities for people. Of course, they're all validated promotional processes and we look at all of the aspects of promotion that we should. And I think that we are very inclusive. And I think that if you look at the numbers in the promotions, it's a very diverse group. And we've given opportunities for women and minorities all along the line.
Through the history of my career, I've never really seen significant changes in diversity without a specific written plan on how to accomplish it. And so are you planning on developing a specific written plan?
Yes, through our diversity office, we are.
Okay, if you could share that plan with me and the process that you're going through to develop it, that would be great. And then lastly, I'd like to know how Capitol Police handle equipment that belongs to a member or a staffer that's been lost within the Capitol complex and found or recovered by one of your officers. What happens?
Sure. Well, it's processed on what's called a PD-81, which is a property record. And depending on the property, depending on how it's, if you can legitimately determine ownership, then it's generally turned back over to the owner of the property. If it's part of an ongoing case, then there are other things that have to occur for that to happen.
So if a member says that they have equipment that's been lost and you find it, it would be returned to the member?
In a general sense, yes.
Okay.
You have to be able to positively identify the property and be able to establish ownership.
Right. And if ownership is established?
If it's part of an ongoing case, then there are additional things that need to be done.
But if the member owns the equipment and there is no ongoing case related to that member, then the equipment is supposed to be returned.
Right. In a general sense, yes.
In a specific sense. If the member loses the equipment, says they lose the equipment,
yes, ma'am,
and it is found by the Capitol Police, it is supposed to be returned.
If ownership has been established,
right,
it'll be returned. If it's subject to an ongoing investigation, there are additional things that need to be turned
over. But not an ongoing investigation related to the member. If the equipment belongs to the member, it has been lost, they say it's been lost, and it's been identified as that member's, then the Capitol Police is supposed to return it. Correct?
Well, it's not I can't give a yes or no answer on that because I know
it's a simple yes or no answer.
Well,
If a member loses the equipment,
yes, ma'am,
and it is found by the Capitol Police or your staff, and it is identified as that member's equipment, and the member is not associated.
You know, I really can't stand weakness. I really can't. Here's this policeman, yes ma'aming this demanding, loose cannon bitch, forcing him to answer a question the way she wants it answered, because her ass is on the line. And he's over there going, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. You know what? I would have said, you've asked me this question 3 freaking times already. I've given you the answer. This is the policy. Got a problem with it? Go over my head. Done. I would have been done. I would have gotten up out of the chair, and I would have said, see you later.
Associated with any case, and that is their equipment, it is supposed to be returned, yes or no?
Depends on the circumstances. And if the circumstances are...
I don't understand how that's possible. Members' equipment is members' equipment. Under my understanding, the Capitol Police is not able to confiscate members' equipment when the member is not under investigation. It is their equipment, and it's supposed to be returned.
Well, I think there's extenuating circumstances in this case, and I think that, you know, working through counsel and the necessary personnel, if that in fact is the case, and with the permission of through the investigation, then we'll return the equipment. But until that's accomplished, I can't return the equipment.
I think you're violating the rules when you conduct your business that way, and should expect that there would be consequences.
See, I would have jumped in and I would have said, well, can you cite the rule? Can you cite the law? Can you cite the case? See, this is what I mean, and this is what's frustrating. When someone like her, you know, is about to threaten someone, well, you're breaking the rules. Okay, well, what rule is it? Can you cite me? Can you give me the ordinance? She wouldn't have been able to. I mean, I don't know why it's so hard. That's why, I mean, how much of this system is rigged? Is it 100%? Is every political atmosphere, no matter at what level, is it all rigged? That's all that police chief had to say. He goes, well, all right, well, can you name me the ordinance that I'm violating? And if so, then go and take the proper steps and do what you have to do. I'm out of here. But he's playing along, going, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Well, you know, there's extenuating circumstances. How about this? We'll release it when we feel we're supposed to release it. Have a nice freaking day.
Are you back?
Gentlemen, thank you for your testimony today. Chief, Assistant Chief, we let you off easy. Chief, you answer all the tough questions, but we appreciate both of your leadership and service to our country. We appreciate the many officers that are out guarding the Capitol right now, that are away from their families, putting themselves in harm's way.
I think, you know what? That's probably their way of apologizing to this man for having to sit under that broad, ridiculous and insane, fear-based and desperate questioning. Maybe that's their way of apologizing. Certainly, this police chief showed remarkable restraint. I myself, which is probably why I'm not in a position of authority that way, and I'm not in government, because I don't play games like that. Someone's being a jerk to me, they're going to get it right back. I don't care who they are. The woman was totally out of control and out of order. And with this last and concluding clip, you're going to see why she was so frantic.
Got to get to this other story. I want to get your take on this. This House IT worker is facing charges this morning for bank fraud, accused of double billing the government for computer equipment. Federal authorities arrested Imran Awan at Dulles Airport 2 days ago, where he had a flight booked for Pakistan. He was going to Pakistan through Qatar. Several relatives of the 37-year-old were fired months ago, but Awan was kept on staff by Florida Congresswoman and former DNC chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz. We've been talking about this case because it's real murky, Robert. First of all, him and his brother were making $165,000 working in the IT department, which is much more than anybody else was making. He was fired for talked about in terms of wrongdoing for in the computer by taking people's data. But there's also speculation that there are ties to the Muslim Brotherhood here. What's your take on this?
Well, a lot more facts, I suspect, need to come out before we can really make a definitive judgment about what this is all about. But it's troubling if, when the facts do come out, what people knew and what people didn't do about it, if they, you know, allowed this person to remain. This is not a good thing.
I don't understand how they got the job and worked there for so long anyway. What do you think, Dagan?
I think that this individual, Imran Awan, and his brother were under investigation for months and months, and he still was working for Debbie Wasserman Schultz. When did he get fired? He got fired Tuesday morning, mm-hmm. I believe. That the fact that this was going on for weeks and months, and that he was busted. They literally busted him at Dulles
while he was trying to get out of the country.
And his family already left.
But there was equipment found in his house that was smashed that they were trying to destroy.
Well, this goes back to, I mean, national security issues, too, with Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And, I mean, she's currently in office. And so it's alluding to why.
This goes right up to Hillary Clinton and her smashing of her equipment as well. This goes straight to the top, folks. This goes straight to Barack Obama.
Why? Where was the break in chain of command within her administration for her office? Why were these people still employed?
You know, and the other thing is, was the FBI involved to give a heads up about the potential risks here, or did the FBI instead, for purposes of the investigation, you know, want this, allow this to go forward so that they could gather additional evidence to make a case? I mean, I don't know enough to know what exactly went on here. I suppose we'll find out, you know, in the future. You could imagine circumstances where the FBI might not want to blow the whistle on the thing too early because they were still gathering evidence and may have asked, you know, and put the congresswoman's office on notice to, you know, just let us handle this. You know, I don't want to make judgments about that because I don't know enough to know what exactly was going on.
But this criminal investigation came to light, what, in February? And most Democratic lawmakers cut ties with Awan and his family after that was revealed. Not Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
And let's point out, she was the one who was hacked.
Right.
So. Right.
Is there a connection there? She was the one who was hacked.
And the DNC is not handing over their server, by the way. So there's all kinds
of... They hired a private company to look at the server rather than giving it to law enforcement.
Yeah, you'd think the default position would be time to cut ties. I mean, that would be...
How are these people allowed to defy law enforcement? Where's the subpoena? If you have a subpoena to hand over equipment and you don't comply with that subpoena, where are the arrests? And yeah, Debbie Wasserman Schultz probably kept that relationship because maybe she probably knows she was hacked and God knows what they have on her. This is why I hope this Awan guy starts singing. Could you imagine? Could you imagine if a Muslim tied to the Muslim Brotherhood can actually expose our corrupt politicians at the top? How ironic would that be? Here's the rest of the 18-second of this.
Ordinarily what you'd expect to happen, but I don't know whether or not, you know, the FBI got involved and asked them to just kind of hold off while we continue to do what we're doing. Who knows?
It was the U.S. Capitol Police that was really investigating first. Robert, great to get your insights as always.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Robert Ray there. Coming up.
So there you have it, folks. There is Washington, D.C. at work. Your tax dollars going to the American government. My name is Michael B. Have a great weekend. See you Monday, 10 a.m. Central Time on the Truth Zone.